Welcome to the Popcorn Junkies.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm fine.
It's a Popcorn Junkies movie review. What are we reviewing, Mother? What is the name of today's film?
It is The Holdovers.
The Holdovers, I think.
Which means nothing to me except a bag.
I think The Holdovers is a... Is this like, you know, spring break? Is it one of those sort of academic phrases that's well known?
I don't know.
The idea of people who have to be held over a Christmas period and sort of basically babysat at sort of like a college or a sort of boarding school or some sort of
thing. I suppose so. Don't you think it's strange they didn't release it for Christmas?
They did in America.
Oh, they did in America.
Yeah, it's being described as possibly what will become one of those most unusual of Christmas movies. We were bemoaning this year the lack of... And in fact, many of the studios have stated this fact, that they're not going to try and find the next Christmas movie.
Oh.
And so a number of reviewers, I think The Guardian here too, said this could be, interestingly, the next Christmas comedy drama. As I say, it's set in a boarding school.
It's set in the 1970s.
Yeah, it's clearly set in the 1970s. The trailer makes a huge deal of almost overplaying that 70s nostalgia. And in this film, in the first minute, the titles, the colours, even the sort of... They sort of play with the format of 70s filmmaking. And then so you have this kind of 1970s Fuji film thing. I felt that was overplayed a bit too much. I was getting sort of like Roger Crumb-like sort of cartoon satire a bit there. Mm. But anyway, so it's The Holdovers. Who's it by? It's directed by Alexander Payne. Who's Alexander Payne? Well, Alexander Payne did films like, interestingly, he did About Schmidt, which of course was the Jack Nicholson film. And he did Sideways, which was that sort of...
That was years ago.
Yeah, Napa Valley wine movie type thing, which I saw and everyone... It was very cool to say you like... It's very cool to say you like Alexander Payne.
Yeah, it certainly was Sideways, yeah.
Yeah, and it's almost like there's a sort of arched eyebrow, like, what's wrong with you if you don't get on with Sideways?
Yeah.
I thought it was all right. Nebraska. Of course, he did Nebraska with Bruce Dern. Do you remember the black and white film where he's a sort of crabby old guy? And it's kind of all right again. It was all right.
I don't think I've seen that.
Downsizing, the Matt Damon film.
Yeah, that had Matt Damon in it, so...
Yeah, but it was odd. And so this is The Holdovers. So he does comedy. He does odd comedy. I neither like or dislike, but I've never had a strongly positive, but neither have I had a strongly negative approach to any of his films. So it stars Paul Giamatti. Are you a Paul Giamatti fan?
Not really. I find him unsavoury, basically. I think he's a good actor, except that he always plays the same part.
Right. Yeah, I don't dislike him. I've always felt I like him. I think my problem with Paul Giamatti is he always plays what I would call very unflattering roles. He's not afraid to, you know, like even in that Billions or whatever that series was, where he was into S&M. You know, he doesn't mind doing stuff that makes you go, I don't want to see that again.
Makes you cringe, yeah.
It makes you cringe. And this film is a bit like that in that his character, well, we'll talk about his character. His character has kind of like got positives and negatives to it. It also stars a young boy, Dominic Sessa. Dominic Sessa, I think he's been talked about in terms of Oscar season and all that kind of stuff, isn't he?
Okay.
I don't know him from anything else. But it also stars Daveen Joy Randolph, who I really like. She won, obviously, the Golden Globe for this role. And I know Daveen Joy Randolph from Best, The Idol. She's part of Lily Rose Depp's sort of musical entourage.
Oh, okay.
She's just kind of whip smart, very droll, very funny. Me and Nadia, she pinged out to us. We loved her. And so what's the premise of this film? The premise is that essentially it's a boarding school. Paul Giamatti is a very unpopular medieval history teacher or ancient history teacher. The kids hate him. And then a couple of kids have to, every year, you know, one of the teachers pulls the short straw and has to look after the holdovers, which is all the students that don't go home to their incredibly rich parents.
Because as I was jetting it over all over the place.
Mum, I've never asked your opinion on this, because what's your theory on kids' parents who send their kids to boarding school?
I don't like it.
But it's like, why have kids?
Well, exactly. They have, exactly. I don't think it's quite the same in America, although maybe it's not the same here, in that I think it often comes from the father wanting the boy to go to the same school as they did.
Yeah.
I mean, that used to be very common. Maybe it's not so common.
Yeah.
But it certainly is in the Boris Johnsons of the world, isn't
yes.
it?
Yes, yeah. I think there's a sort of received wisdom that it's not the nicest thing for anyone to be separated from your family. So this is really the story of Dominic Sessa, who's one of the boys. Something's happened to his dad. We think his dad's dead until later in the film, but something's happened to his dad. His mum split up. His mum's got a new boyfriend. They're very rich, and they're not going to come back, and he's not allowed to come home for Christmas, and he finds this out late. This is all said in the trailer, so spoiler city to a degree. And Paul Giamatti is, because he's hated by both the staff of the school and the students, the staff managed to kind of curate it that he ends up having to do all the Christmas babysitting. It's essentially a babysitting film, isn't it? And really what we have is a sort of a situation comedy with heart. in which we have a sort of, it's one of those sort of, it's a little bit like Little Miss Sunshine, where you have a sort of slightly dysfunctional family structure.
Yeah.
In the form, in this case, of Paul Giamatti looking after a bunch of students.
And you don't want to be there.
None of them want to be there. And at the halfway point, half of them then aren't there.
Yeah.
So it ends up just being Paul Giamatti, Davine and Dominic, the
young boy. She's the cook, she's the head housekeeper.
She's the head housekeeper, but she's also lost her son in, I reckon it must be Vietnam.
I think it's Korea, I think that's why the boy was...
Oh, it was the Vietnam War, yeah, cool. Serving in the Vietnam War. Korea was more the 50s,
wasn't it? Oh, okay, was it?
So she's lost her son, she's mourning the loss of him. And there's a little bit of a talk about, you know, the sort of civil rights issue that he couldn't go to college, didn't go to college, you know. And so
they couldn't afford for him.
So you've got her, you've got Paul Giamatti. So they're all kind of not wanted. Or they're all hurting, aren't they? They've all got their sadnesses.
Yeah. We don't know anything about his backstory at all, do we?
No.
I mean, at one point he says that he was nearly married or was married.
Well, I think that's what's quite nice about the character, is it starts off with him. I mean, we both felt the film starts with Paul Giamatti almost overacting.
Yeah, a bit over the top, yeah.
He was doing, I mean, you said it just at the beginning, he seems to play the same role.
Yeah.
And did you feel he was playing the same role he's always played?
Yeah, but also with
an... What is that role?
Well, it's didactic. It's sort of slightly bullying, if maybe didactic.
Yes.
That.
Yeah.
But he's sort of on top of it. He sort of slams the table, and he's...
He's always using kind of smart ass intellectual commentary to kind of put people down.
Yeah, sarcastic as well. I would say. Yeah. But it was also added to in this because he's a classics professor. He keeps sprinkling everything with Greek, which is really annoying. It's annoying for me, so it must be annoying for the boys.
Yeah, I mean, this is a curious... This film is massive. You know, there's a lot of chatter around this film on the festivals, not on the festival circuit.
Is there?
On the award circuit. I mean, you know, I think, again, you know, Davine could win an Oscar for Best Supporting Actress. You know, lots of chatter about Paul Giamatti. I was surprised because just from the sort of, like, let's look at the whole kind of concept, I can't quite work out what was appealing about the whole topic, You know, looking after a rich boy who's got, you know, his own trauma. Who's this speaking to?
Yeah. And also the time it was set as well, when it's so specific to that time.
Yes.
And I mean, okay, we do know that some Americans are very rich and they land in helicopters and whisk off their sons. But at the same time, I thought, I mean, my famous line to you, I don't know where this is going to go. I mean, I thought it could only go one way, which was that Paul Giamatti ended up dead.
So it's a comedy.
It's purportedly, yes.
But it's not massively laugh out loud.
Not at all.
It's... You know, a number of people have contacted me on the channel and said, oh, be prepared, it's quite emotional too. It was emotional, but not very emotional. Mm. And so essentially, it becomes principally a two-hander between Paul Giamatti and Dominic Sessa. It's a buddy movie. It's a reluctant sort of father-son-ish kind of relationship.
Yeah.
You know, he starts to pull the boy out. The boy sort of pulls him out.
Starts to understand him.
Yeah, and you get and so going back to your thing, we don't know anything about, really, Paul Giamatti at the beginning, but you discover more and more of their backstories. Paul Giamatti has this condition where he smells of fish, which is kind of difficult for him.
He's
got a funny eye, which gets funnier and funnier and goes off in all directions across the film. And I believe, I'm right in thinking, I read somewhere, correct me if I'm wrong, that it was either prosthetics or digitally enhanced.
It was
roaming much more than...
Does normally.
Well, there were times where I sort of thought either whoever's controlling it has lost control of it, because it was kind of dipping right off into the... But anyway, so he's curious looking, and we get a lot of Paul Giamatti in extreme close-up. And it's very unflattering. Yeah. It's the blotchy skin and all.
He always does that as well.
Yeah,
he always
looks incredibly like Homer Simpson.
Yeah, that's true.
Did he play Homer Simpson? I'm not too sure if he did.
I don't know, but he does. It's true.
So did you buy into, before we get into the sort of the threesome relationship, what was your take on their relationship and their sort of the shtick?
The teacher and pupil.
Teacher and pupil. And the pupils to begin with, because we both felt... I felt the pupils were a bit weak.
Very weak. And I actually thought... I didn't know it sort of... Well, how could I know? Because I didn't know any of the story at all, that most of the boys would come and be taken away by one of the boys' father. So it ended up, as you say, as a two-hander. And I thought right from the beginning that that particular boy who was going to become the other partner wasn't strong enough.
Which boy are we talking about?
The main boy.
The main boy in the film?
Yeah. I mean, I didn't like his acting. That's why I asked if Alexander Payne wrote this, because... It was something that wasn't strong enough, either his character, the writing. He wasn't funny, he was a stroppy teenager, but he wasn't stroppy in any interesting way.
Yes, I suppose when you... it's weird to couple this with a film like Saltburn, but when you see how much charisma there is even in likable and unlikable characters in a film like that, I think you've hit upon a really important point. I think I struggled with finding the warmth in this film, or the heart, even though it was trying to aim for the warmth and heart between the two of these two guys, teacher and student. And I found virtually no heart in the boy. I didn't feel for him, really, even when, you know, his parents were neglectful or he was not. I didn't feel anything for him.
No, I didn't either. And I thought the attempts, and there aren't that many, but the attempts to make him human, like before those friends go off, there's a scene where the Korean boy of the lot is crying in bed because he's lonely and homesick, and he's nice to him. Mm. And that's supposed to tell us, I suppose, that he's a nice guy. Mm. But it's not done well. It's not done with any sort of conviction.
I found the boy stayed at the same level of... I did not like him. I did not care, but I didn't care enough. And I found that Paul Giamatti's character got deeper and more sort of tragic and more poignant as we went along. But because there wasn't almost... Because the boy wasn't changing, you know, the two of them weren't coming closer to each other. So I got closer to Paul Giamatti and I kept feeling, oh, we're getting... You know, bless him, his thwarted love. He has a sort of... There's a suggestion that a romance will happen with one of the sort of administrative women that works at the college when she invites them
really
to...
Good,
she was great when she invited them to a Christmas party. I thought that was going to happen. And you felt his sort of isolation and his loneliness. And I thought Paul Giamatti actually did a really good job after a really bumpy sort of 15 minutes where he almost played the archetypal... unpleasant history tutor. We started to get layers in him, but in a weird way I would have looked at the edit and said I think we need to reshoot the opening scenes because it was almost too much of a change. There was sudden depth and light and shade, and we really accessed his empathetic aspect in relationship to him and Devine, didn't we? That's where we saw there was that lovely scene. I thought it was beautifully played between him and her where they're sat in front of the telly and they're just talking, and she's talking about her son. I didn't really understand what the film was trying to say there either, in terms of Devine. I mean, why have Devine there at all?
I'm going to say something really unpopular.
Right, okay.
I mean, I didn't think Devine was that good. I mean, again, not that I didn't think she was good. I didn't think didn't think she had anything to say that I was interested in.
Yeah.
And in that respect, she wasn't allowed to be good for me. And because I hadn't known her in anything else, I couldn't sort of base it on anything.
Right.
So I didn't know what that conversation was about. It didn't speak to me.
Yes.
And all her scenes, or most of her scenes... We're supposed to, and we do up to a point, feel sympathy for her predicament.
Yes.
And she's obviously grieving or whatever.
Didn't go anywhere, though.
No.
Didn't really go anywhere.
And it didn't convince me. So much of this film didn't convince me.
Mm. Come off the fence. What did you think of this film, Mum?
I hated it.
Okay, well, now we've kind of...
Cat's out of the bag.
Cat's out of the bag. We've thrown the cat amongst the pigeons. We've opened the can of worms. Why? What was it about it that made you profoundly... Because I think you really didn't enjoy it, did you?
Mm.
Yeah.
Really? Well, I mean, let's just focus on anything. The music drove me mad.
Oh, did it?
I'm very, very big on music. All the music was country and western. Okay,
very
I have a problem with country.
Though.
Yes, but so deadly.
Didn't like it.
And everything was signalled. I hate it when music signals the way we're supposed to feel, and that was all of that. It seemed... This is the only reason I asked if you wrote it. It seemed not worth... saying.
So you mean it's your query is did he write it and was it semi-autobiographical, because there was
I think I read somewhere it was semi-autobiographical, but in that case we've just seen a film somewhere that we both said the writing it must have been the Dogtooth Man.
Poor things
the writing was whip smart. Mm. Every sort of, and I'm not saying that I would expect that, but it was so the opposite of that.
It's unfortunate because this is the film we've seen after Poor Things, so I think the contrast is quite stark, isn't it? Where you have
stark.
Sort of almost every non-line or pause in Poor Things was laden with meaning and cleverness. And I know what you mean. This felt like it was... My problem with this film was it fell foul of what I think Sideways fell foul of, and pretty much all his other films have with me, which is I think everyone thinks that... They should say that Alexander Payne films are cleverer than they are. I don't think it was particularly clever.
Not at all.
And I don't think it was particularly original. And what I struggled with this, which I struggled with in Sideways, is there's a curious masculinity to his films. Which is a kind of... It's a liberal macho.
Yes.
I think it's a kind of liberal machismo.
Yeah.
That's even threaded through the emotions of these films, which I can't get on board with. That's not my kind of... I think you can be male and you can be emotional and still be male, but in a much more real way. I still find that there's a stiffness and a sort of dislocation and a sort of still a subscription to being a bloke, and it felt blokey. This film
that is such, that's probably the most interesting thing you've ever said in these reviews.
Crikey.
I think that is absolutely, absolutely true, and I would never have expressed it like that. But that, I think, was not the only thing, but a huge thing I was rebelling against.
Yeah.
I didn't, even the woman was sort of stuck in that blokiness, because it's her son we're talking about, so it's all men.
And she's
men.
Having to bounce off these other two blokes as well.
Exactly. That's what you just said. It's true. And I
mean, right down
to
even towards the end where you get this potential. I'm not talking about wanting gloopy emotion or anything like that. I mean, for example, Uncut Gems is a very blokey film, but there's raw masculine emotion.
Yeah.
I mean, Scorsese films, even though he can't do women, but when he does men, there's a raw masculine.
Yeah.
You know, it's not about touchy feeliness, but there was a kind of, it's almost like an equivalent to stiff upper lipness. There's a sort of hold at arm's length and kind of brotherly kind of, and I felt it in Sideways. I felt it in Downsizing with Matt Damon. I felt it in this, where even when it reaches to the kind of absolute apex or the critical moment of emotional contact, it's just like, it's like, all right.
I absolutely
Weird.
Agree with that.
Because there's a moment in this where we see the boy meet his father, and I felt
nothing. Yeah. In fact, that whole scene, what's Weird. The word you guys all use these days? Icky. I felt it sort of really, no, I don't want to see this. I don't believe the guy. Another thing I've just realised is, and I'm not saying you need laughs in everything, but it does help if there's the odd comedic moment. There was nothing that was funny. And in that scene, there's a line that's supposed to be where he comes forward and whispers in his son's ear. We're supposed to find that funny.
Because
his son's opened up to him.
Yes.
And he comes back with what most people, old people, say when they're having delusions.
Yeah.
Didn't raise a smile on either of us.
Not at all. Well, we both felt in this critical moment in an insane asylum that they were, where they were heading to, they'd either have to head towards deep emotion, reservoirs of emotion, or the absolute opposite of that is to undercut the severity and significance of a scene like this with a really funny line, which was about something totally, but it was just flat. And I tell you what I think the problem with it is. The only person in it who exuded what I would call an organic,
a whole character,
owned warmth was Carrie Preston's character, the woman, the administrator.
Yeah.
Everything about her felt emotionally
real. As if she was in a different film.
Even though clearly the suggestion I felt baked into some of her comments was that she was a bit of a floozy. She likes a bit of a good time.
She was brilliant.
She was excellent. And I believed her kind of connection with Paul Giamatti and what have you. I'll tell you what I think the problem with this film is. I think it's a director who doesn't understand what sentimental means, striving for sentimental.
Yeah.
And he missed his target massively because he's not a sentimental guy.
No.
He's a bloke. This is a bloke trying to make something emotional. And it fell foul of still remaining blokish.
That is so true, and I would never have gone that far with my thoughts.
Right down to I could almost smell Paul Giamatti in there. I felt I can smell the blokiness of this film.
No, I do know what you're saying. Yeah,
even the boy, they all smell, they're all blokey.
Yeah.
It's a blokey film.
There's no sort of lightness or of touch or, I mean, I'm not at all saying I need a joke every line, but you do need something that lifts it. I mean, the woman who's heartbreaking, she's given heartbreaking lines, but you'd think there'd be some, as you say, the only person who seems to be giving us an absolute real person is that woman who...
Yeah, she's great. Carrie Preston. She plays the administrator, invites them to
party. The administrator, She's really, really good.
Right down to the scene in the restaurant. She was great in that, the way she kind of was. But I didn't believe the conflict between him and the boy. It was, I have to say, a lot of the blocking out of the scenes was very perfunctory. It was very functional kind of direction. It's not a particularly cinematic film, again. And I was, you know, I've learned in the last year with Anatomy of a Fall and Women Talking and films like that, that it doesn't have to be a cinematic film for something to be thought-provoking. And at times I was thinking on this film, you can see this as a play, can't you? You could see this as a stage play very much.
Yeah, but it's a bad play.
I mean, it just didn't get me. I think to give the few positives that I did feel, I thought Paul Giamatti grew into the part.
Yeah, no, he definitely was better halfway through than he was at the beginning.
And I think Paul Giamatti found an emotional depth
level, yes,
which that other woman, Carrie Preston, was at the moment she landed on screen. But unfortunately for Paul Giamatti, the other characters, Daveen and what's his name, Dominic, the boy, nothing in their story arc or the script allowed them to get to the same place.
No.
And in a weird way, I felt Paul Giamatti was coming closer to, conventional sentimentality, but the director didn't understand that, so didn't go there.
No.
And none of the other kind of characters could take him there. So
no.
I felt like I was really actually going. And so what did I like about it? I liked what I started to go on with Paul Giamatti. You know, the moment where he bumps into an ex-person at school and he lies about the book. I thought that was interesting. You know, wanting to show off to someone, even at his age, that he's done something that he hasn't done. Well, it was, but it fell flat because everything everything around, even the couple in the street. Yeah. Lots of cardboard cutout characters.
Yeah, I mean, I know.
I found the same thing in Nebraska.
Nebraska had
the same problem with it. Yeah.
I mean, yeah. I know I go on about who wrote what and who wrote what, but I think you either have to, you have to have something behind what he's showing us. And if it's not filmic, if it's the music is lousy, if the acting is only just okay, and you haven't got the script, what have we got?
I thought we were in trouble when there was that first scene with all the young kids in the sort of barracks,
in the
halls of residence.
Yeah.
And nothing about it was funny, clever. No. And none of the performances felt particularly...
No.
Oh, this is interesting.
And also, I think maybe that was when I started thinking this is bad.
that was 3 minutes in.
Because young people today, and I mean, it doesn't help that they've all got wigs on from the 70s and they all look absolutely
ridiculous. And please, you
ridiculous.
Mentioned that. Who the... I don't... Please, someone. Marks. Please, someone.
Bette
someone.
Noir.
It
Bette
is my Bette Noir, but look at the wigs. I mean...
They are terrible.
I'm beginning to think that actors...
They ask for them,
but there has to come a point where, yes, the makeup artist is looking, and obviously your DOP and continuity are all making sure everything maintains itself, and obviously era and, you know, all that kind of stuff. You've got to get the kind of era right.
Yeah.
But there's still surely some responsibility for the actor to look at themselves before they go on set. Maybe they just don't look at themselves, because I'm sure when they... And then I wonder if they do look at themselves and sign up to the hair pieces they're all wearing. Is this what's going wrong with wigs in Hollywood?
Okay.
For many actors... It's a sign they're an actor.
Maybe.
I'm wearing a wig.
Yeah, maybe. In fact, I think I heard an actor say that once.
And so, consequently, in a weird, perverse way, they want people to know they're wearing a wig and they're playing a role.
It might be.
Which defeats the purpose, because they all look ridiculous.
Yeah.
One of them looked like Zac Efron's younger brother.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank God the boy that the whole story was about didn't have a wig, or at least he had a good one.
And Paul Giamatti had no hair.
So in that respect, we weren't forced to watch I mean, have I just said this as well? Ignore it if I did. But young actors today... No, I started to say it, didn't I, before the wig thing came in, are so good in things. I mean, I haven't seen Euphoria, but I can imagine that I've seen other things.
Right.
And they're so brilliant and nuanced. And,
absolutely.
That you can't sort of put down five young men and give them, say, anything is happening when they can't... it's not that they can't deliver a line. They're given nothing to do.
And I think that's the problem. That's why it's not the actor's fault. I think you hit the nail on the head. I mean, you only have to look at... It's not equivalent in any other way, really, other than the Toffs and all that. But you look at Saltburn. Whatever you think of Saltburn.
Sorry,
I mean, every single character in it. You know, I'm thinking of the cousin in Saltburn and
he's
the sister.
Yeah.
They're all great. They've all got layers and they're all whip smart and they're all delivering funny lines and sad lines. You're right. You have a scene like that. This was like a film made... I know he was trying to make it look like a film from another era, but it ended up feeling like a film from the wrong era.
Yeah.
And it made me realise, thank God we've moved on from that era.
Well, exactly. And it kept sending me, as I realised as it went on and it got to about three quarters, and I thought, I'm hating this and I don't know how to tell Mark.
Yeah.
It seemed...
Well, I was trying to extract as much as I could from it.
I know you were.
But it's 2.5 hours long.
I know why. I mean, it's like they added half an hour of boredom.
Say that again. Why?
But the thing is, I kept going in my head, and this is not good, subs, to Dead Poets Society, which was made probably about 20 years ago, but was so like a group of young men and a teacher, a charismatic teacher. But there's ways that you could say Paul Giamatti was supposed to be charismatic, you know, if you sort of take that
line. I think he did manage to pull off quite an impossible thing where he smells horrible, he doesn't look particularly attractive, he's not very nice, and he managed to make me kind of care for him.
Yeah, actually, you said that. I didn't at all. And maybe I've stumbled on... What I mean there was that... I mean, obviously not everybody's Robin Williams, but when he was doing his I'm a Greek professor and I'm really humanist sort of stuff, he should have been vaguely funny, and the lines clearly indicate that he is thinking himself funny, and they're not.
This is a weird kind of liberal macho that I don't like.
Do you think it's... I mean, is there much of it?
I don't like it.
Oh, okay.
I don't think it's sinister, but I just don't like it. It's kind of... It's soulless.
But it's not in many places.
It's kind of the kind of man who... We know the guy, that kind of man, because we had one in our past, the kind of man who's quite happy to fart freely amongst other people because that's actually suggestive of equality.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just not nice. You're a man farting. Anyway, what would we score it? What would you score it, Mum?
Oh, blimey. Now, interestingly, I haven't even thought about that.
You're not going to believe what Rotten Tomatoes has given it. I'll tell you afterwards.
Yeah, tell me afterwards. I would give it, if I was absolutely forced to, by twisting my hand up and back,
okay.
27.
20... That's a good gauge. I'd give it, because I think I warmed to Paul Giamatti a little bit more than you.
Yeah,
I could tell
by your body language.
Yeah, and I think the one laugh out loud moment for me was Devine staying protective of the record deck, of the record player.
Yeah.
That was a laugh out loud moment.
No, that was actually.
Evaporated very quickly.
Yeah.
I'd give it 30.
Oh, blimey. So
a little bit more.
Much.
Do you want to know what Rotten Tomatoes give it?
What?
We're way off beam, Mum. 97%.
Wow.
Most movie reviewers love it.
Do you know what Mark Kermode said?
What?
He said to Simon, whatever his name is.
Who never seems to have seen anything.
Never seems to have seen anything. In the showing that Mark Kermode saw with other critics, at the end of it, they all sat there and they all looked at each other and said, why don't they make films like that anymore?
But Mark Kermode is, I mean, he's
That's
great,
what
Mark
I'm
Kermode.
Saying.
But Mark Kermode is this kind of macho.
You're right.
Mark Kermode's the same macho. He's Alexander. This is Mark Kermode.
But also, unfortunately, he's our main critic, so he shouldn't be.
I'm fascinated to know what a lot of women reviewers make of it.
Good point. Mm.
Anyway, what do you think, guys? I know a lot of you guys, a lot of our followers have been really excited about this film, think that we're going to love it. You've said that you're going to be surprised, it's emotional and all this kind of stuff. So we've clearly, it hasn't spoken to us. What have we missed?